Hello, welcome to Use Your Words Author Speak. My name is Elise Stewart, and my co-host is Tom Hester, and we have Vonda Michelle Nelson with us today via the phone. We're really fortunate to be speaking with her. She is an author who has written several children's books and won awards for many. My favorite one is Almost Freedom. It's a story of the Underground Railroad, and it's beautifully written and beautifully illustrated by Gregory Christie. The other very interesting, one of the interesting books is Bad News for Outlaws, The Remarkable Life of Bass Reeves, Deputy U.S. Marshal, which also won several awards. And then she's also written kind of a bio and documentary about her great uncle, Louis Michaux, who had quite an amazing bookstore starting in the late 40s, which went for 40 years in Harlem and was an educational center, actually, as great bookstores are. So welcome, Vonda, and we're so glad to have you with us.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to be having this discussion with you today.
Great. I wondered if you would read a little bit from No Crystal Stair.
Okay, this is from 1939. The bookstore opened in the late 30s, actually. And Louis is talking about the idea of opening a bookstore here. 1939, Louis. People are still struggling to recover from the Depression, but the soul of Harlem showed itself before the crash. Fools say, those were the good old days, and they're gone. Well, what blacks need to be doing now is talking about the good new days ahead. I keep coming back to the same thing, knowledge. Our people need to continue on the climb Douglas started. They need to read. I'm talking about books you don't find in just any bookstore. Books for black people, books by black people, books about black people here and all around the world. The so-called Negro needs to hear and learn from the voices of black men and women. This office would be perfect for a bookstore, my bookstore.
That's great. That just gives the beginning of how Louis Michaux began this. And didn't he begin with just $100 or something?
Yes. When he decided to open the bookstore, he tried to get a loan from a bank in New York and was turned down. The banker said something on the order of, if you were going to open a place to sell fried chicken or chitlins, then we would give you a loan. But black people don't read, and he had no confidence that Louis would be successful. So Louis was in the position to do this on his own, and he had what he calls the book itch, mm-hmm. and was determined to open his store. So he put the word out, and some people let him look through some of their books. And so he found five books that he wanted to put in, and he had $100 apparently, and decided he was going to start his bookstore the next day.
Wow.
And of course, he was selling books on the street through from a cart.
Mm-hmm.
And ultimately, the bookstore grew to be very successful with over 250,000 titles by the time the store had reached its peak.
Wow. 50,000 from five.
Yeah, 250,000.
Oh,
yes.
Gosh. That is amazing.
It's an amazing journey.
Yeah.
And that was the reason when I learned his story, I was so impressed with his struggle and his determination and the passion that he must have had to fight this fight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a struggle to accomplish what he did. So I ultimately realized that this wasn't just a family story. It's mm-hmm. the story of my great uncle, but I felt that this is a story that needed to be put out there for the world.
Yes, for the world. Yes, that's the way I feel about it, too, because eventually he had people like Malcolm X and Langston Hughes and Muhammad Ali and Nikki Giovanni that would come to the store and
right.
hundreds, probably maybe thousands of people that are not known, that were educated and that were gathered together to learn, you know, what a...
Yes. It was more than just a bookstore to come in, to a place to go into as a regular retail store to just buy books. It was a gathering place for so many of the movers and shakers of the time. And just, yeah, as you said, your common man or woman who just coming to educate themselves and to join the conversation about what was happening in the Black community at the time and in the country.
Yes.
So this was a period just somewhat after the Harlem Renaissance.
Yes, it was after the Harlem Renaissance. And when the Renaissance ended, it was, you know, the Depression happened.
Yes.
Sort of right at the end of that, and that in many ways brought the Renaissance to an end, the Great Depression. And people were down and struggling. And Lewis, I think he himself was looking for something to believe in, something to find hope in. And, you know, books saved him.
Right.
And then he went on to save others through his bookstore and through just allowing people to come there and learn about themselves and their history.
Mm-hmm. Did you have an opportunity to know your great uncle?
I knew him a bit as a child. We lived in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and they lived in New York.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandfather, who was Lewis's brother, lived in Portchester, which is in Westchester County. And we would go visit them once a year, a car trip
yes.
for about a week. We didn't really go to the city much. The kids didn't. We spent most of our time visiting our grandparents at the house or going to the beach, to Rye Beach, or there's an amusement park there called Playland.
Mm-hmm.
And so we spent our time mostly there. But occasionally we would take the train into the city, and we would hit places like the bookstore. I only have one clear memory of being there. I believe it was in 1968 because I know it was in 1968 because I have two books that my uncle gave me when I was at the store. And so I was 14, and I remember it being very narrow and just crowded with books, and the pictures of African chiefs and famous African Americans were hanging up high up on the wall, sort of looking down. And I just remember feeling an energy there.
Mm-hmm.
But as I said, I was 14 and really unaware at the time of the significance of the store.
Right.
I didn't really realize that until I was a grown-up.
Would you be willing to share with us what titles your great-uncle plucked from the collection to give to his great-niece?
Oh, yes. He gave me a copy of a book called The Masquerade by Oscar Michel.
Mm-hmm.
And a copy of the King James Bible.
I see.
And he signed the Bible and dated it, and that's how I have kind of have a record of when I was there.
That's great. Yeah. I was wondering, of course, it began as a story about maybe a family member, but then, you know, as you've already said, it's about something so much bigger. And I don't know if you could describe the format of this book, because it's very unusual, and it works so well.
Yes. Well, it started out, first of all, as I said, it started out as just family history. I wanted to find out more about my uncle because I kept meeting people when I was in library school who would say, "Are you related to that Harlem bookseller?" And I'd say, "Well, yeah."
Sort
Not
of.
Really understanding at first why they thought so much about this store. And I ultimately decided I need to find out more, because clearly something happened there that I'm unaware of. And this is my family.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started to do research, and the more I learned, the more I felt this is a story that isn't just family history. This is American history. And I started writing it as a straight biography, and I finished the draft, actually, and showed it to some people, and ultimately hearing feedback and also just reading it through myself, I began to feel that I hadn't really captured Lewis's character, and that I needed to rethink it. It just felt dry, and that I hadn't done him justice or his story.
Mm-hmm.
And so at the time, I was in the middle of doing some reading of other people's work. Two of the books that I read that really influenced the format were a book called Talking About Bessie, which is by Nikki Grimes. She writes for young people, too. And it was a collection of poetry telling the story of Bessie Coleman, the black aviator. She told it through a series of poems. Each poem was told by a different speaker, had been written by a different speaker, at her funeral. And, of course, this was a fictional situation that was set up. But when you finish the book, hearing people sit around and talk about this individual, you know how that happens at funerals. People sit around and share stories,
right,
and that's
right.
Basically what this was. But when you finished the book, you had a real sense of this person's essence. And I also read a book by Marilyn Nelson called Carver, A Life in Poems. And that was the story of George Washington Carver. And for an older audience than Talking About Bessie.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it was this series of powerful, just stunning poems that left me feeling, I've always known about George Washington Carver, and I knew he was a brilliant scientist. But when I finished that book, I just had a sense of the humanity of the man, of the spiritual part of the person, in addition to his brilliance as a human being. And I looked at that format and thought, maybe I could do something similar. I've written poetry, but I don't consider that my strength.
Mm-hmm.
And thought maybe I could do something similar through prose. And so I started over with the book using the voices of people that knew him or encountered him, his family, his friends, people that came to the bookstore, people he encountered in other situations, like, for instance, the police officer that he encountered when his gambling place was raided, and also using documents that talked about him, like articles from newspapers, FBI files, birth and death certificates, those kinds of things, to tell his story. I kind of began to see it as one of those kind of film documentaries in print form, where you know how they interview people and they show clips of their work or things related to their lives.
Hang on to that thought, Vonda. We'll come right back. We're just going to take a very quick break. Welcome back to Use Your Words, Authors Speak. And we have Vonda Michelle Nelson with us today. So we're going to kind of continue in the stream of conversation where we stepped out of the creek for a minute. We're going to step back in. We were talking about No Crystal Stair, Vonda's book about her great uncle and his bookstore in Harlem. 1939 it began. So it began before the war.
My mother worked there for a while, and she said they used to send books to the soldiers. During World War II.
Right, and you mentioned that it was a documentary novel.
Yes, when I started working on it and creating this new format, my husband's he started calling it documentary fiction. Uh-huh. So that made sense to me.
Yes.
And actually that kind of gave me something to think about as I was continuing to put it together.
Mm-hmm.
And so then ultimately the subtitle became a documentary novel.
It's a very unique book, and I'm going to get another copy and then donate it to our library. I don't think I can donate my own copy, but I'll have to get them another one. You know how it is.
It's a project I'm proud of, and
yes.
I feel my uncle would be very pleased that his story is out there.
I think he would. Most definitely, most definitely. So besides No Crystal Stair, you have been very prolific in writing about African-American history. I read Almost to Freedom when I was teaching preschool in the Montessori school, and the children just loved it so much, and that's where I first heard of you and began to try and find you to interview you. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I'm glad you tracked me down.
I had some help.
Finally.
I had some help from a librarian friend. So tell us a little bit about Almost to Freedom and what the book is like, and how did that book come to be?
Well, actually, I find stories in many places. My husband is very good at helping me in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
We were visiting the International Folk Art Museum in Santa Fe for the first time, and there's a Girard collection there, which is a collection from one man's life collection that he donated, and it's an eclectic collection of a lot of different items that he collected around the world, and one of the exhibits is an exhibit of black rag dolls in this rustic setting. And when you walk around the museum, they give you this little booklet that tells about each exhibit. And in the booklet, it said some of the dolls were said to have been found in Underground Railroad hideouts. And when my husband had seen that before me, and when I read that, I got this chill. And he looked at me and said, he leaned in and whispered, actually, there's a story in that. And I said, well, yeah. And the wheels started turning. And I looked at those dolls and I said, if only those dolls could talk to me, what would they tell me? I wanted to know this history. So ultimately, I created this historical fiction picture book. The narrator in the story is a black rag doll who is the doll of a slave child who escapes with her family through the Underground Railroad. And I did a lot of research because I knew what the Underground Railroad was, but of course I didn't have all the details that I needed to really write a story that worked for readers in this way. So it was an exciting project, and it was actually the first project that I did that was not based on my own experience, that was outside of my personal experience, and it was kind of a growth period for me as a writer.
It's such a great book, and so beautifully written and illustrated, and it explains the Underground Railroad in ways that a small child can understand. It makes it perfectly clear because it gives an example of what it was. And hiding.
Colin Bootman, the illustrator, he did receive a Coretta Scott King honor for this book,
right.
So that was exciting, too.
Yeah, that's a fantastic book. And then we have to talk about Bad News for Outlaws.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
That story, too, actually, my husband helped me find that one, too. He knows how much I love history, and black history in particular. I was away on a trip, and he saw this program on Blacks in the West that was on the History Channel. He taped it, and I came home, and we watched it together, and there was just this tiny mention of Bass Reeves. And I said, who is that? And my husband knew a little bit, And what he told me, again, made me feel, I need to know more about this guy. Mm-hmm. And so the next day I went to the library and started to do research, and I kept saying to myself, why don't I know about him? And why doesn't everybody know about him? An amazing, amazing individual. He was a deputy marshal for 32 years under Judge Isaac Parker in Indian Territory, which was at the time period probably, if not the most dangerous area of the country, it was among them. It's a place where outlaws and bad guys found as a haven, and because it was Indian Territory, but there wasn't much law there. Mm-hmm. And so they often spent a lot of time in that area, and so the marshals had to go into Indian Territory to track them down and arrest them. And Bass was, he was strong and an excellent marksman. I think he had a photographic memory because he could not read. Yet he was able to sometimes take 30 warrants out at a time and bring in the right person. He would have someone read him the warrants before he left, and he memorized the shapes of the letters for each one. And that's how he brought in the right criminals, matching them to the warrants that he had. He also, even though he was an excellent marksman, he did not want to use violence unless he absolutely had to. And so he caught many of his criminals by using disguises. He would pretend to be a farmer or another outlaw so he could get close to them and arrest them without using deadly force. So also his sense of honor and duty became, well, that's actually one of the things that drew me to him. His son had committed a murder. He had killed his wife because she had been unfaithful in a fit of passion. And Bass ended up being the one to go and arrest him because he knew that it was the right thing to do. His son had broken the law, and his son ultimately received a life sentence, but he was released after 10 years. Mm-hmm. For, wow. You know, for good behavior. But Bass was just an incredible man, and I wanted, again, to tell his story. I want his story to be out there in the same way that, you know, everybody knows about Martin Luther King Jr. and Rosa Parks and mm-hmm. George Washington Carver.
Right.
I want his name to be among them mm-hmm. when people are talking about blacks who have accomplished great things.
Absolutely.
Yes. You've had an experience now of presenting books for both the kids and adults. Do you find that the audiences are different? Do you find a different level of enthusiasm? Do you think as an author you'd prefer to have a 6-year-old or a 8-year-old audience than a, 45-year-old a set of individuals at a reading?
Well, I love writing for young people, partly because when I was growing up, my parents read to us, and I know how books influenced me and what it meant to me. I mean, they made me laugh, they made me cry, they made me think, they made me learn and change and grow. And I really like to think that my work can do something like that for other young readers. Adults can grow too, of course.
Right.
But children are much more, they're just in the process of developing who they are. And I love that adults are reading my work and enjoying it. And I hope they're changed and affected and entertained as well.
Wanda,
I hope they get it.
Yes,
too.
that's the highest hope that an author could
so
have.
So you're carrying on your great uncle's work.
but children, I just love the idea that maybe I can change a child and make a difference
absolutely.
In the rest of his life.
Oh, absolutely. Vonda, thank you so much for being so flexible and speaking with us. And we just appreciate you so much.
I am so pleased that you reached out to me, and I hope that we can talk again sometime.
Oh, that would be
so
lovely.
Too.
Lovely. Thank you. This is GMCR.org, KURU 89.1 FM. Use Your Words, Authors Speak. Thank you for listening, and we will be with you in two more weeks.
Keep reading.